Tweet at TodaySOR.
First-time house buyers may have been spared the worst of the strict new lending rules proposed by the central bank, but many borrowers will still have to come up with bigger deposits before they can buy a home. The new limits could also make it more difficult for families in cities to buy a house compared with people in rural areas. The governor of the central bank, Patrick Honohan, says the new limits on mortgage lending will help to ensure a stable and well-functioning market. With me now, Carl Dieter of the Irish Mortgage Brokers and also Ronan Lyons, Assistant Professor of Economics at Trinity College. Thank you both. You were both here debating this issue fairly vigorously a week or so ago. Now we have facts as opposed to proposals. First of all, Carl Dieter, what do you make of what the governor has decided on?
I think it was a wise decision to roll back and concede some ground. It's not to say that on every front, I believe that the bigger deposits are a bad thing. I do think first-time buyers needed some kind of reprieve. They have gotten some of that. Having said that, The current narrative seems to be, oh, well, it's 10% deposits. In fact, a lot of first-time buyers would use only an 8% deposit. So when people are giving comparisons and they talk about a house that might be, say, 300,000, you could actually buy that house, get started on purchasing that house with 24,000. Now you'll need 38,000. So it can turn into a rather large uplift if you're borrowing more than 220,000. And the fact that the Dublin house prices seem to be beyond that and indeed rising, it could mean that in the short term, at least, you're trying to play catch up with something. And there could be distortions down the line. You might start to see prices settle around the 220 mark, almost go up to that the same as they did when there were stamp duty bans in the past. But in the main, I'm much happier today than I was yesterday, because yesterday the vista was that they were going to do 20% across the board. I think that this is a far more nuanced approach, and since the beginning, we were calling for a more nuanced approach, and this is closer to that.
On the other hand, Ronan Lyons, somebody buying a house in the Dublin area, and I know the governor said, look, at least half the prices sold for first-time buyers were at the 220,000 level. But a lot of houses as well for first-time buyers are being bought for, let's say, 350,000, which is a lot of money, and the deposit now has gone up from 35,000 to 48,000. That's a big jump.
I think, but it's important to remember that these things go the other way, that first-time buyers effectively set the price in the housing market for everyone, not just themselves, for the entire market, because the price of things are relative to the cheapest, typically, first-time buyer homes. So what the first-time buyers are able to afford is ultimately what's going to determine what the price is going to be. That won't happen overnight. There will be an adjustment period. I think perhaps more attention might need to be paid to the loan-to-income ratios rather than the loan-to-value ratios. I know the central bank said that, so the new rules effectively mean that for 80% of people borrowing, they're going to be subject to 3.5 times max their household income in a year. So if you earn, for round numbers' sake, I know it's a lot, but suppose you earned 100,000 euro in your household in a year, that 3.5 times would be 350,000 euro. That'd be what you could borrow, and then your deposit on top of that. Now, the central bank said that, well, when they look at lending in 2013, that basically 80% of lending is that or less anyway, so it won't have much of an impact. But I think, and Carl probably knows this better than I do, 2013 was not a typical year in the housing market. And when we get back to a more normal housing market, this loan-to-income ratio maybe, which I wouldn't have been in favor of anyway, I think this may have an impact in particular, as Carl mentioned, or maybe it was yourself, Sean, on the Dublin market.
Carl Dieter, do you agree with that?
It can. Again, these things, like the kind of the second round effects or what comes next, it's very hard to predict. All you can do is kind of take your best guess at what might be some of the effects it has. The two-pronged approach does have some leeway. I should mention that, and I've probably failed to mention it in the past because I suppose my argument
is the multiple of salary.
One side, there is some discretion to allow some lending above that amount. There is discretion to allow some lending above the loan-to-value limits. The thing that is important, though, and what I think sometimes gets missed in all of this, is that when you are looking at credit, people tend to earn more as they age. And so when you're underwriting someone and you're saying you can't go beyond 3.5 times of today's income, if that causes them to have to wait 5 years or change their behavior and the house market moves on them, or they make other decisions or they put off decisions, it's just that there's other things that can happen. So you might have people choosing to have children later. You might have people choosing you know, not to spend on things that would be good, like funding their education because they want to save for a bigger deposit. So it's that kind of stuff that's the unforeseen that we don't know about that this can have an impact on. Because like already this morning, you've got Construction Industry Federation saying that a lot of house building is now stalled. That is a bad thing because ultimately, and this is something that I think we all agree on, we need more houses.
Yeah, we'll be talking to Tom Parlin, actually the Director General of the Construction Industry Federation, just after 11. But I think that story was about what had happened when the original proposals came out. Maybe it'll change now as a result of the certainty being brought into it.
Well, but you still get this lag effect. In other words, if they made that decision back last September, October, and it's been delayed for a quarter of a year, well, then that's, you know, 3 months of progress that didn't occur. And that's what I'm saying, is that really what we have is a supply shortage in certain areas. Other areas have huge supply, and these rules are absolutely fine in most of the country. But the areas where it's not working, really, we need to find some more focus on that. To a degree, this whole debate has missed the point, and I think that trying to fix it via central bank rules was always an error. But look, this is what came down the line. I am glad that they listened to the Department of Finance. The Department of Finance really, I think, was the people's champion on this one. They took a far more pragmatic view of it, and I think the central bank acknowledged that, and therefore they changed their mind.
Ronan Lyons, you were arguing fairly strongly, I think, last week that they should stick to their 80% level for everybody, albeit maybe by way of phasing it in. So have they watered this down too much?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. The reason that central banks bring in macroprudential policy is they want to try and shut off the channel through which confidence on the part of banks affects house prices. And the reason that 80% is favoured internationally is because at their most conservative, that's roughly speaking what a private bank will ask for. So if you lock them at their most conservative, you turn off that channel. That bank being more or less confident is not going to affect the deposit you need. Now we have a situation where for at least a certain fraction of the market, they'll be able to go up to 90% at the moment. If banks were to become significantly less confident in the future, we could still have credit conditions affecting house prices. And perhaps the more general point is that the higher that number, as in the smaller the deposit you require, the higher you push up house prices. And that's not a good thing for competitiveness, and it's not a good thing for financial stability. So I don't think they've done the wrong thing, but I, as in, we're better now. We're better off now than we were a couple of months ago having these. But I do think that we haven't completely shut off the bubble crash cycle.
And Carl Dieter, we've been talking so far just about first-time buyers, but what about people who want to trade up because maybe their family has grown, they need to get out of where they are? Do you share the concerns, for instance, articulated by people like Michael McGrath, Fianna Fáil, that this is going to effectively lock many people into where they are in cramped conditions for far too long?
I suppose I'm going to have to give you a two-handed answer on that. On one hand, he's a politician.
Like a good economist.
Yeah, he's a politician talking politics. On the other hand, you had this happening anyway. You had a lot of people who were in negative equity who weren't able to move on. Now, negative equity mortgages aren't affected by this policy, but I'm just saying that for the past 6 years, that problem has already existed, and the central bank cannot be blamed for that. That is nothing to do with them.
So does this change anything then?
Well, what it does change, for instance, is someone who might have some equity, they might have to get some more savings. But the thing is, as you're living in a house, by virtue of making payments, you're reducing your debt. So if you've been living there for a while, and not everyone is in negative equity, I should add, with recovery in the market, with the ability to pay down your debt and some savings, I think people, you know, responsibly should be required to put down more money if they want to borrow more and they're not a first-time buyer. My whole thing about first-time buyers, by the way, was that home ownership is one of the biggest determinants of household wealth. There was a study done on that in the USA, and it showed that it was quite often a bigger determinant than even college education. And that's something that I think can't be overlooked.
Ronan Lyons, I think you were telling one of my colleagues earlier that you hope to be a first-time buyer this year. Now, does anything change in regard to your own hopes and prospects as a result of these conditions being spelled out by the central bank governor?
I mean, I think if I go into the bank next week as opposed to last week, I will probably get a smaller mortgage because the central bank are now clear on what is or what is not the case. I think one of the limits of I mean, they say, you know, rules should be flexible, and I can understand where the the 10 to 20% exceptions come in. So for some people, they will be able to borrow more than 90% or more than 3.5 times their income. And that's my concern, is that a bank might look favorably, say, on me trying to borrow if I have a public sector income and they see increments on the way or whatever it might be. It may just embed discrimination against not formal discrimination, but discrimination on the part of banks against certain categories of borrower. So it's possible I may be affected. I'm hoping I won't. I'm hoping I'll be able to get into that that exception category. Of course, everyone is, because individually, everyone wants more credit. And that gets back to the key point. If you give people more credit, all you do is push prices up. So there may be some fraught discussions at home, but ultimately, I think we're better off for these rules being in place.
Do you think they're going to affect the price one way or the other, though, Ronan?
I would be surprised if it didn't affect the price of second-hand homes in Dublin, which are, in particular, well above people's incomes. So the loan-to-income ratio, I think, will have an impact on the Dublin market.
So it might make it cheaper for you to buy that house, you hope?
That's the intention of these rules is to bring the price of housing more in line with people's incomes. So hopefully it may not, and house prices typically don't adjust overnight, so it will take perhaps a few months. But hopefully we will see the price of, hopefully from my point of view, we'll see the price of housing come down. But it is also good for competitiveness if housing is cheap, so I think it's good for the country as well.
Yeah, I would agree. Cheap housing is a good thing, but I would also say that you do have to consider outcomes. If you look at a country like Canada that has had this for a long time, now they also have insurance that allows you to circumvent it. Your average house price is €300,000, and that includes cabins up the side of mountains and things. So, you know, you can have bad outcomes even with good policies in place.
But you're going to get a far better house than a cabin up a mountain in this country outside of, say, the Dublin area if you have €300,000 at your disposal to go buying.
Precisely, but what I'm saying is a country that has a long history of this policy has exceptionally high house prices. And that's what I'm trying to get at, is that the supply of housing is an issue. And if you have people thinking, oh, well, the price of houses will come down because credit is constrained, really, if you're not building more houses, what it does is it just means it reprofiles who the owners will be, and prices generally can rise and rents can rise. The actual key to the whole solution isn't what we're talking about. The key to the whole solution is more housing supply.
We'll leave it there. We'll talk to Tom Parlin about that. He of the Construction Industry Federation in the second hour. Carl Dieter of Irish Mortgage Brokers. Ronan Lyons, Assistant Professor of Economics at Trinity College in Dublin. Thank you both for joining us.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.